to really bring in acknowledging and doing it in a way that's going to impact us, minimize the impact. So I'm proud to see California moving forward swiftly and really responsibly. So I just really want to acknowledge that. And not only just the leaders, I mean, residents have been cooperating in a major way. And I really want to acknowledge all of you as well to really participate in decisions that have not been easy for us as electeds to do, but it has been the responsible thing to do. So thank you for that. So ever since then, we've been trying to move as quickly as possible in decisions. One of the things that I did as the council president, which one of my duties is really managing city council, make sure that we're moving forward, that we're meeting to move forward, the issues that are prominent in our community are still there. They haven't slowed down. In fact, they've been growing. So as council members, we have had to continue figuring out ways in which we're meeting. So last week, I introduced a new a proposal in which we're going to be meeting as a council, as the full council, until we relieve this the state of the emergency. So the council is going to be meeting every Tuesday, once a week. We will start at 9 a.m. with closed session if we need closed session, and then soon after convene as an open meeting for the public at 11 o'clock. That meeting, it's available to participate. We're still exploring technology to engage community members and participate. We're very mindful of that. So I want to make sure that as we're moving forward, we're not leaving the community behind. So one way that we have accomplished community participation is we're asking the community residents to basically email our city clerk their comments that they want to be read in the record. So that's still available for people. We're hoping to change that format, but we're still exploring what the best way to do it. And then we'll meet until we finish the docket for the day. The docket is going to be published and available to the public. Every Tuesday, we're going to strike for the Thursday before the Tuesday to issue the docket with documentation available for the public if they care for issues. And that, and we, my office, has created a summary of the items that will be addressed on the Tuesday council meeting. So that way people, if they're interested, they can participate. So we're trying to make it as engaging and as available as possible for folks to really participate. One of the areas, and I heard a little bit, so I'm sure that we'll have more discussion later, but one of the areas that we are still trying to figure out how we're gonna manage, as you all know, the mayor released the budget yesterday, his proposed budget, and there's, because of the economic impacts that we have all been hit, there's proposals to significantly reduce staffing in certain areas. Certain operations are being proposed to be cut, like library hours, park and rec hours. We're gonna go through the process. What will happen at the end, it really is depending on how we all manage the conversations and where we wanna go. So those public hearings are still going to be available for the public. The chair of the budget committee manages that process. So we're still waiting to hear back how she's going to manage the hearings, the budget hearings. So as soon as we know, we will share that with the community. And we truly, I cannot stress it. I always say this, but even now we have budget challenges. It's more important to hear the public how to resolve these issues. Obviously, we get elected to make those decisions, but I'm very much mindful that I really want to hear from my constituents to give me direction and how to participate. I really want to encourage residents to really either participate during the hearings, send us your thoughts via email, or call Stouffer. And I can truly tell you that that's gonna help me guide me in how I'm going to be navigating this budget cycle. It's not gonna be pretty. Just give you a sense of a flavor. Our budget is dependent on taxes, obviously, right? And we have the tourism tax, we have sales tax, both from internet and then on businesses, property taxes, and all of that has gotten hit. We are projecting, I don't remember how much we were projecting, but I can tell you as an example, the tourism occupancy tax, TOT, what we referred, and this coming in April and in May is projected to be at zero. That's not a good thing, obviously, but that's what we're projecting. So that is going to impact our whole budget and how we manage it. So I really want to invite you all to truly, truly participate and guide us. One thing that I'm still trying to explore is traditionally when the budget starts, I do a town hall meeting in the district with the IBA, the independent budget analyst, to present the holistic proposal and narrow it down to how does this impact the District 9. We're still trying to figure out how to do that and explore ways in that where I can still do a budget town hall with District 9 constituents, because it is important. Please stand by. We'll make sure that we let you know how we're going to proceed with that. But that's still something that I truly want to pursue with because it's important, especially right now. Decisions are going to get impacted in difficult times. So that's the budget. And we can go into detail. I know that you all have some questions related to some CIP projects. Another thing, aside from proposing a proposal to the council and how we're operating as a council, I also did a couple of propositions early on where I introduced a moratorium on evictions, both on residential and business. For those businesses that are still renting, we wanted to make sure that they were protected. Obviously, they have to work with the landlords to make an arrangement and how they're going to pay. Folks that are impacted financially because of COVID, they have to prove to the landlord that they've been impacted negatively financially, or even when they have to cut their hours because now parents have to bring their kids, and they have to keep their kids at home. So that means maybe they have to readjust their work hours. Some folks are dealing with health crisis issues, so that also impacts the income that is coming in. So we were trying to be mindful specifically because we do have a huge rental population that they were going to get hit. So that's why we introduced a moratorium. And we're also working with landlords. We want to make sure that they too don't lose their investment. So I'm very sensitive to that because one does not help the other. So we're still working on trying to figure out and put pressure both at the state and at the federal level to ensure that that we're bringing more resources, more relief for either renters or the landlords to ensure that people are not losing their shelter or their investment. So that's something that I'm being very proactive in because it's really important. So that right now it's an ordinance that got adopted by the council. It's in place until May 31st. If we have to extend it, the council does have the authority, although we do need to bring it back and adopt it. So that would be something that if need be, we'll bring back to extend the moratorium. So that's something that is still to be determined. It's based on the emergency crisis that was declared by the governor, and that what we also declared it at the local level. So it was tied to that. Once we have that emergency declaration, then the moratorium will stand, but we would need to bring it back to the council to adopt it again. So that's in place until May 31st right now. The other one that we did also, aside from the moratorium, the mayor worked closely with my office to introduce a small business fund. We were able to pull together some money from our current money that we had to create a fund, a relief fund. It was about $6 million. The word in the street is that it's already It's already been spent, but we've been able, the mayor was actually successful in bringing along other entities outside of from government, some businesses and bankers as well, that have created an extension of the business fund relief fund. I believe it's about $4 million that were identified by these entities from, I believe it's from Qualcomm. I'm not gonna name them all, but that's we're working diligently and making sure that we're finding other money or partnering with other entities to expand this fund because it's very significant. In terms of utilities, just in case if you don't know, the city has implemented a rule that we are not going to be shutting down anybody's utilities, water or electricity, because of not having enough income, or you're not going to get fined late fees if you pay your bill late. So that's something that shouldn't be occurring. If that happens to you, or if you know any residents, please call us and we will help out with that, but that shouldn't be occurring. We also have a few, for those that maybe you might know some folks that not have, because right now our world is very much dependent on technology. There are still some people that do not have internet at home, that might not have a laptop, that's still a reality. We have resources available, so please contact us, and we'll make sure that that information is available for people. Certain companies such as Cox, Verizon, they have stepped up to make their services available at either a very low cost and at times at free for those that are not able to afford it. So please reach out to us and let us know. We want to make sure that people are connected and they're having access to this technology because it's really critical. This is the way that we're communicating. So we want to ensure that we're not leaving anybody behind. So that's really important. In terms of, I spoke about the budget, and there will be a whole budget process, and I can't say what that process will be. Normally in the past, we take about 2 weeks every single day, Monday through Friday, where we hear every single department. This time, because of the circumstances that we're in right now, I'm assuming that the chair of the budget committee, Council President Pro Tem Bree, is the one that is working on establishing the process. So we're still waiting to hear from her and how we're going to move forward. And as soon as we have that, I will make sure that you all get it so you can participate as well. But one thing for sure, I along with Councilmember Campbell, Montgomery, and Moreno, we issue a statement, I believe it was last week, where there were a couple of articles that basically highlighted that the city was furloughing some of our staff people. We have that's been addressed. Nobody's being let go right now. People have been shifted and been placed in other areas to help out. Right now, a lot of our staff have been relocated to help out with COVID-19 assistance. And so that's currently occurring. So we want to make sure that we also are being a bit more, we're being transparent in the actions that the city has taken and will continue to take. So I want to reassure you that if decisions are being thought about or considered, that we communicate that with all of you to ensure that you have participation in those decisions. So we're working hard and making sure that we understand what the city's thinking, and we'll get back to the constituents and share that and invite people to participate. Once again, the budget is one of those areas that I really want to express the importance of people participating. Right now, some of the preliminary, and literally the budget got released yesterday. It's a pretty thick document, so I'm not ready to discuss the details of it, but I can tell you high level, we do expect the deficit. Some of the proposals that are being proposed by the mayor doesn't mean that we're going to end up there, but it's the beginnings. He's proposing to cut library hours, park and rec hours, proposing to cut, I believe, over a certain amount of staff people, I think over 200 or something, like 300 employees from certain areas, proposing to reduce the graffiti abatement program, as well as the tree trimming, and I believe street sweeping. Those are some of the areas that are being proposed. And I'm sure that I'm leaving some others out right now, but that's, like I said, that's preliminary. That doesn't mean that that's where we'll end up, but that's just a beginning proposal. The other piece that we're still exploring, because we're still trying to figure out what really is, what we're still trying to find out exactly what we're working with in terms of money for the city. We know that it's going to be less than what we have previous years. We know that, but it's still early enough to not understand the economic impacts that we really are facing. So what the mayor, along with the council, we're considering a different budgeting approach. Instead of adopting a full year or a couple years, the mayor is talking to the pro temp, who's the chair of the budget committee, to perhaps think about doing a quarterly budget adjustments, just to really react to the situation that we're dealing with right now. So that's being thought about, and it might be a proposal that we might do, and it might make sense, because we're still trying to figure out really the holistic impacts financially. And also the federal government is making decisions right now. We are working on trying to get relief. The local cities are working on getting relief from the government, from the federal government. So that's still a possibility. We have been given some money. We haven't seen it yet, but in the current draft budget, that money that came from the federal government or is being allocated is not reflective. Some of the council members would want to see it reflected in the budget, because we are going to be getting it. So that's a conversation that we're having. And then right now there's another round of relief being discussed at the federal level. If there is money for the local or the state that trickles down. So there's some, even though we're bringing in less taxes, there is money being allocated by the federal government. So we want to make sure that we understand what that looks like to ensure that we're making the right adjustments at the local level. Because at times, if we cut certain things and we have to ramp up, that's a bigger cost for us. So we're trying to make sure that we do the right decisions at the right time. So that's why we're considering doing a quarterly budget as a possibility. My office created if you want more resources related to the COVID-19, there's tons of resources that are popping up every single day. My team, Stouffer actually, along with other community reps, have been trying to pull all of those resources together. And then my city's website for District 9, if you wanna go there, there's a specific area that says COVID-19 resources and information. I invite you to look at it. There's a list from unemployment, food distribution, everything that people have questions, even medical. Where do you call and things like that, or when to call or when to go to the hospital. And it's a really useful source, and I really want to invite you all to look at it. And if something's missing, do let us know, and we'll try to figure out more resources for that particular area that we're not covering. So please make sure that you check that out. In closing, because I do want to hear from all of you, I once again really want to thank the El Cerrito Community Council for organizing this meeting, this Zoom meeting, and I really want to express my gratitude for you all for getting together. And like I said, if you want to do another one in the future, in next week, whenever, reach out to us. There's a lot of information that is developing by the minute, so we want to make sure that you have that information. If there's any questions, that we're answering the questions, or we're finding the answers to those questions. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, And for any questions or whatever you want to do now.
Great, Georgette, thank you very much. Before we open it up to questions from the community, I'd like Officer Hoskins, if he would, to see if he has a report to the community, what he might want to say, and then maybe sort of give us a quick rundown on thoughts about crime in the neighborhood and whatnot. At a meeting this afternoon, I heard that crime south of the boulevard was somehow up, but I haven't seen the crime reports. So Terry, however you want to take it.
Hi, everyone. Let me know if you can hear me or you can't. I'll try to. Good. First of all, I wanted to say that I like everybody's smiles. So I don't know if you can read my note, but it says everyone has a lovely smile. So I want to make sure everyone knows that. And Stouffer, I don't know what's this on your face, but you're becoming a handsome young man there, dude. I like that. I don't know what it is, but it looks good.
Thank you, Terry.
That was your caveman, like, sheltered look or something. It's looking good. Everyone, I wanted to say that I truly appreciate El Cerrito for getting this together. This is like my third one today. So it's been, I think this may be the thing to do in the future. I like this. We've been busy, to say the least. For the month of March, Mid-City Division as a whole responded to 7,064 calls for service. The 20s ourselves, we did 2,659 calls for service. And then for the El Cerrito area, for the month of March, we responded to 193 calls for service. So we were busy. You would think that a lot of people may not be out and about, and I don't mean this to talk evil or ill of anyone, but most of the good community members are. They're sheltering in place. They're doing what they're supposed to do. But that same group of nefarious activity people that they're still doing it. As I said earlier this morning to another group that I was speaking with, property crimes has been on the rise. If you think about it, everyone's vehicles is parked out on the street now. So it's one of those things where you have nowhere else to park. So it's easy opportunity as far as people walking by, taking advantage of the opportunity to see something. We encourage everyone to make sure all your things are out of your vehicles. If you can, park in under illuminated light of some sort. But, you know, it's just, unfortunately, it's just the nature of the beast. We still have calls of people shooting each other, stabbing each other. Domestic violence is starting to creep up a little bit, understandably so. Everyone's been in shelter place. As much as we like our significant others, I don't know if we want to be locked in a month place with them at one time. That's an unusual prison sometimes, so that's how that goes. But I do have to echo Council President Georgette's comments, because collectively, the community members we've seen have just been doing a fantastic job. I mean, they really have. They're very supportive of each other. They're giving, totally giving of themselves to include people. They're giving stuff to, you know, the medical side of our communities, which are been amazing. So kudos to a lot of people, and I think the community as a whole are just doing a very, very fantastic job. And we truly appreciate the support that we're getting as far as the blue side. And I do talk to business owners, and if I could have the ear of Georgette for just one moment, is you're right. When I walk around and I see business owners that are actually hurting, Some, they may be in their businesses, they're not open, but they're in there, so I'll still stop and talk with them. Florists are having a hard time because they don't really meet the criteria necessarily of a farmer's market, but yet sometimes they do, depending upon what they're selling. So any type of relief that business owners can get is definitely the way to go. If anyone has any questions for me, I don't want to take up time for your asking questions or Georgette and stuff, which is way more important. You know how to get a hold of me, email me, text me, call me on my cell phone. I truly appreciate, again, and I'll close after this, all the hard work that the community itself does for each other. And I mentioned one thing today, and I'll throw it out there again. I'm considering doing touchy-feelies because everyone has been sheltered in place and money is becoming an issue for a lot of people. If you know a lot of elderly people or businesses that may not have money to do cleanups or community, gardening and that kind of stuff, I'm interested in doing a weekly area cleanup or beautification type thing. But my concern is I don't want to do El Cerrito and all of a sudden El Cerrito don't have anybody else doing it, and I got volunteers from Rolando Park or Rolando. So I want to make sure everyone will still volunteer. And it's just, again, it's not painting or anything like that, but it's just weed whacking, trimming, beautification. I'm looking more for the elderly who maybe can't get out themselves and maybe low on money. So with all that being said, I'm going to unmute myself so you can get back to the business and talk to the main person at hand there. So got a smile, Georgette. We see you. You got a smile. There you go. Beautiful smile. So get back, ask her questions. She's the one you want to talk to. You don't want to hear an old guy like me talk. So,
Terry, thank you very, very much. Georgette, I know that you received some questions from the community ahead of time, and we were going to start there, but would you rather start and take live questions from people here and then go to... How would you like to do it?
Why don't we do this? Let's take the live questions. And if we don't, I did get the questions submitted and we have answers typed up that I'll be reading to you all. So what we can do is if we don't get to the questions that were sent to us, I'm more than happy to make sure that we email them back to you, Lorna, and they can be shared. But I want to actually acknowledge the people that have participated and they're here. Would want to hear from you all. There might be some questions that are in the questions that were sent to us. So I would rather just have a more robust conversation with the people that are here. And if we have time to get to the submitted questions ahead of time, we can get to them. And if not, we'll be happy to send them to you so you can share them to whomever asked them.
Okay, great. And I see Eva raising her hand, so I'm going to call on her. So just so we don't end up talking over one another and wasting a lot of time. So if you do have a question, if you just kind of raise your hand, I'll take notes of them and then call on you. Eva, go ahead.
Well, something came to mind when Terry was speaking, but it's relevant to the council member also. I live at the corner of Alcorn and Baylor, and last summer, SDG&E put in a brand new pole, and it's very nice, and it's got a new mast arm light fixture on it, and they have never lit the light. The old one had a street light, and Terry was saying, park under a light. Well, we're pitch dark down here because, and I've called, I've emailed, I've copied you on correspondence, you and Stouffer on correspondence with SDG&E, and it's just sort of been there's a few paperwork to finalize or something, because they had to work with the phone and the cable and those other companies to get them signed off. But I've been really bird dogging it, and it's just been months. I kind of gave up. Personally, I don't mind it being dark, but under the circumstances, I have neighbors asking me because they know that I've been the one that's been trying to, it just needs to be turned on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll make sure, I just texted Dofer just to see if he had the latest, but let me personally, I will make sure that we follow up.
Okay, that'd be cool, because I think it would make us feel safer down in our little pocket.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, thank you.
You got it.
Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. Next, anyone else? Margo, I know you had a question. I can't remember what it is though, but about some ongoing projects, right?
Yeah, you kind of touched on it. I did submit it, so I didn't want to take away time from the rest of the community. But just wanted to touch base, and I think Vanessa on the phone asked as well. Given the governor's just release of the budget, mm-hmm. I don't think you said it was a thick document. You probably haven't had a chance to go through it.
We're looking through it.
Any update on, you know, the repaving of Redland Loop? We were talking to Stouffer about that at the start. And then one of my takeaways is, given kind of the feedback you shared about the community really coming out and how important that is, mm-hmm. Does it make sense for us to kind of rally the community over the next 2 weeks to show to the mayor like how important this is to mm-hmm. us, even given everything else going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is definitely important. We're still allocating money to pavement. That's not changing. I mean, what's going to change is we're not going to do to the level that we were expecting. So that means we have to prioritize. And there's various different ways in which we make decisions or the staff makes recommendations. I'm constantly advocating for pavement in District 9. And I can assure you that we've been advocating to lift District 9, your community, El Cerrito, in the budget decisions. That has not changed, nor will it change, even through these difficult times. Participation from the community helps me quite a bit. And not only for me to hear it, I mean, I hear you. Stouffer's hearing it. That gets shared with me. But also the mayor. So does it help to rally community during the time? Yes, it does. Because it makes it harder to cut that particular project. And it might even elevate it to a bigger priority. I really, truly do want to invite you there. As soon as I have the schedule of the budget, because the way that we've done it before is we take every single department, not all at once, day that it is dedicated for Park and Rec or stormwater. So as soon as we know exactly how we're going to go about it, we will share it with
you. And I'm listening to it, but I can't.
We'll share it with you all, and definitely we'll love to hear your thoughts on those decisions. If you cannot participate, you're always welcome to send me, my office, and the mayor an email saying, hey, this project is important for us. Please prioritize it or give us a report of what you're thinking. And that helps. That really does help.
Okay, great. So then the takeaway is we'll wait to hear from Stouffer as to like the exact meeting to attend. And it's a mm-hmm. Zoom meeting, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, perfect. I'm pregnant. I'm 8.5 months pregnant, so I'm not going anywhere.
There you go. We'll make it easy for you to participate, pregnant or not pregnant. Yes, but we're still encouraging. City Hall is still closed to the public. In regards to the city councils, even the budget, the public will be able to participate via either Zoom, they can call in, or like I said, we're still trying to figure it out. The way that we've been engaging the public during city council meetings is we've been asking people to email the clerk either the night before the meeting, so I mean on Monday since we're meeting on Tuesday before 5 p.m., email your comments, and then during the meeting, she'll read up to 200 words into the record, and that's how we register the comments. And they also get shared with every single council member and the mayor's office.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, great. For people that are that don't necessarily know how to use Zoom, there is a little microphone icon in the lower left-hand corner, and you're muted. If you have a question and would like to ask it and your camera's not on so I can't see your hand, you can unmute your microphone just by clicking on that icon and ask a question. And Laura Rebau, you're on the phone, so I did unmute you.
Oh, I don't have a question.
Okay. Mary, do you have a question? I'm seeing some text chat, and I wasn't sure what was going on.
One of your other participants had suggested that he had submitted questions beforehand, and even though he's on the phone, he would like those questions responded to in person. And I was suggesting perhaps we alternate between live questions and written questions to deal with that. I don't have a question. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, it doesn't look like we have any more live questions. Or is there anyone else out there that wants to ask a question of the council person?
Okay. Hey, this is Margot again. Oh, one other question. This might be quick. Could you just comment a little bit on the city's position in thinking of 5G? I know that's not something we've discussed before, but I don't know if you have like a headline or position on the 5G network.
5G network, that's something that basically the amended rules to be able to do 5G were adopted, and we'll make sure if you didn't participate, that happened several months ago. There was a little bit of outreach to the community. The community that we heard quite from was Kensington, just because their community character, they were really worried about the installation of this technology, not keeping in mind their character. So we were able to influence the regulations based on that. Basically for the city council, we cannot prevent this technology from coming in. What we can do is just regulate it, and that's what we did. So we'll make sure, and I don't remember the regulations by heart, and I apologize, but I'll make sure that that we can share the regulations that were adopted by the council. I've not seen any permits, and I don't remember if the permit requests by these companies are going to be approved. I don't think they're gonna be coming to council because they're a lower level. So the council is not going to be hearing unless they get challenged by whomever. Then it gets brought to the council. But the process basically goes through staff to move forward. As far as I'm concerned, we haven't approved any permits, but I could be wrong. I can get the latest and really report back on where we are with 5G.
Okay, great.
Thanks. And I will also make sure to share the land use, the permitting regulations, so you're aware of what they're supposed to and not be able to do.
Great. Thank you. Georgia, we received a number of questions that were related to the economy, and you addressed a lot of that. I'm going to try and collapse a few of these questions. So if they're out of your bailiwick, just tell us that. But the first couple of questions all had to do with the economy opening back up and people wanted to open up and get back to work. What kind of discussions are happening around City Hall and with the mayor, and what might that look like when it does happen?
Yeah, yes, and a lot of the questions were revolving that particular question, and I think that's a question that we're all thinking, right? That when are we going to be able to go back to normality. And I keep saying that because I think the normal is going to change a little bit.
Right.
And that's what really is preventing me from saying, this is when we're going to do this, because there's a lot of things that need to be considered. The reason that we haven't, or the cases have not exploded like other cities, is because we did take extreme precautions early on, and that really has been helping our region. The fact that right now our hospitals are still, we haven't peaked to the level that we were expecting, is because the decisions that we made early on. Trust me when I say this, to be seeing business and redirecting businesses to not allow consumers from coming in and consuming their product was not an easy decision for us to make at all, because that impacts every single aspect of who we are as a region, really, and we're seeing those impacts. So we needed to make those decisions because it really has helped us a lot. We're not New York. We're not seeing how New York has, you know, handled, and some other cities have handled situations or not, and that's a good thing. So the reason we are having to have these discussions, and I've not been part of the discussions yet, and going to be requesting perhaps even docketing a future public discussion and bringing the county and maybe somebody from the state to really get us a better understanding of what that transition plan should look like and we should be thinking about as a society here, region. So we need to ensure that we're transitioning back to that normality that will be different. We need to ensure a couple of things are available. We need to make sure that there is enough testing. We still don't have enough testing to be able to make that available. We need to also ensure that the testing is available, that isolation, supporting those who are positive, that if somebody is diagnosed, that there's enough, there's resources available for them. Right now, we have available hotels for those people that have been diagnosed and they're not able to be isolated at home. Then we have that ability to send them to a hotel and have that resource. Now, if we were to have more people tested and identify that they have that, I can reassure you that that's an impact to us. We're not ready for that level of isolation. If we're coming back, we're asking people to ensure that the distancing is still going to maintain because the vaccine is not available. And really that's preventing us from saying, okay, this is when we're gonna be able to come back to normal. But until we have that vaccine, we're not going to be able to say that. So we're gonna need to ensure that we have a phase-in plan. So if classes come back to schools are called, we need to ensure that there's physical distancing. So how are we gonna do that? We're not ready for that yet. So these are all the questions that we're all thinking through in terms of reassuring that if in order for us to come to normality, that normality is gonna change a little bit. We can't just all come back to our jobs because distancing needs to occur. So we need to have conversations with the employers to ensure that they have systems in place to ensure that we're gonna be able to maintain that type of distancing and still be able to carry the work load that needs to occur. We need to ensure that in classrooms that there's the distancing. So what does that look like? Does that look like we need to hire more teachers because we're gonna need more classrooms? Do we have enough classrooms in the district or what is that? So there's a lot that we need to think through. We need to make sure that we're doing this in a smart way, because if we don't do this, everything that we've been able to do from the beginning till now, then we're gonna be, it's gonna backtrack us and really get us to where we never wanted to be, which is have us have a bigger issue that we're trying to prevent that. Like I said, we're trying to prevent us being from other cities. They didn't handle it correctly, and they were encouraging people to still gather, to have the big gatherings, and all of that is backfiring now. And so we're still in that process. Now, all of this to say that also we are taking the stay-at-home ordinance is what was handed by the governor. So the state also is giving guidance, and we are working closely. One of the things that our region decided to do, and that means the city along with the county and the other cities, was that we committed and really trying to move us in collegially with the state. So we've been working really, really closely and making sure that we're doing the right thing as a state, not only just as a region nor a city. We've been even working really closely with Baja California, our sister city right next to us, because we also have a lot of San Diegans that go back and forth. So we've been wanting to make sure that as we're making decisions, they're mimicking our decisions, because what they do or not do will impact us. And that's the way that we've been operating, making sure that we're all walking together to ensure that this is maintained and contained in a way that it's not going to impact us even greater than what it's doing right now. So we're working closely with the county, we're working closely with the state, and we're still waiting to hear more direction from the state to be able to have this bigger discussion and create the plan of this is how we're gonna come back. This is what it's gonna look like.
Okay, Georgette, thank you. That's, mm-hmm. There's a lot there. This question.
There's a lot to think about.
There is much more than I was thinking, so yeah. That's good. This question is good for you or for Terry or a combination, and it has to do with what's being done to house the shelterless population in San Diego, and are the police continuing to issue citations to shelterless people and causing them to move around the city, and what are there any plans on the table to deal with the shelterless post-corona?
I can, maybe I'll leave, Terry, why don't you share a little bit of what you guys are doing and not doing, and then they can fill in the gaps.
Okay, one of the things it's important that everyone knows, and I think everyone understands this, but sometimes it kind of gets kind of pushed away, is that we still have to respect everybody's civil liberties. So even though there's potentially unlimited amount of shelter bed space for people, especially at the convention center, eventually, we still, if Terry doesn't want to go, I still can't make Terry go. And we have to respect that. And we also have to look at the other thing. There are certain crimes at the moment that our jail facilities in the county aren't accepting. In other words, custodial arrest for certain crimes, they're not going to jail. So as everyone has kind of alluded to, this is definitely uncharted waters for almost everyone. And it's creating an interesting background. We still are out there contacting individuals. We're still trying to offer them services. We're still trying to educate people that are not quite grasping the magnitude when the mayor or the city council says all parks are closed. Sometimes that creates, they think, okay, well, maybe I can just walk my dog through. I can go play catch with my son. There's no one else here. So those people, we want to use the opportunity to educate. And we really don't want to cite people if we don't have to. And so far, we've been very fortunate. To my understanding, at least in Mid-City, I know for sure, we haven't cited anyone for any type of a coronavirus type of infraction tickets or anything. Again, we really believe that we have amazing community members and everybody wants to do the right thing. Even the homeless that we encounter, for the most part, other than their own vices that they have to deal with, they too are concerned. I think one of the things that would be helpful, and I'm sure this has already been discussed, is probably the majority of the homeless don't have masks. That was one of my biggest concerns when I see them. Of course, we don't have masks to give out, but I think that would be, one of the things that they either need to be able to make with bandanas or something. But mask for the homeless, I think, would be something that would be a concern. But at the moment, we're still offering, get back to your question, Loma, we're still offering services. We're still trying to help people. But on the same time, we can't take civil liberties away and make people go to shelters when they don't want to go.
But do we have shelter space for them if they want to go?
I've been informed that through our HOT teams, homeless outreach teams, that there's a way to get bed space if people need it. Now, you got to remember, sometimes people say they do until they get right down to it, and they necessarily don't. They don't necessarily want to obey, follow guidelines, maybe a curfew, no alcohol, those type things. But if someone really wants it, I think our HOT team will be able to find a bed space. To my knowledge, they have not turned anyone away yet that definitely wants it. I don't know if Georgette can add more to that.
Yes. Thank you, Terry, for that. I'll pick it up. So the convention center. So let me just backtrack a bit. Because of the COVID-19, a lot of the convention that were booked have been canceled. So, and a lot of the hotels are literally closed. They're not in operation. The Hilton, the Marriott, Marquis, they're shut down. So the convention center early on, there were communications between the mayor, staff, along with the regional task force, which is an entity that brings together all the cities, and they're trying to work together in creating a holistic approach on how we're going to be moving forward with our own shelter population, even before COVID, and definitely now COVID has brought them together even stronger, and the county as well. So we've been they've been trying to figure out how to move forward with, we're creating a better situation for our shelter population right now because of COVID. If we're asking people to not congregate together in a certain size of groups, that means that, that also trickles down to our shelter population. Our tents that we had, our bridge tents that we had, if you ever saw them, we had people practically tight space with a lot of folks. Really, when this was starting to grow in a significant way, and that we were making decisions like canceling, not allowing big congregations to occur, I immediately thought about a bridge tent. So my first question to the mayor was, what are we doing, or what's our reimagining on how we're going to move forward with our unsheltered population? What does that look like? So ever since then, that's when there were conversations and there was an agreement with the convention center. So we have made the convention center open. What was done there was it was introduced in phases. So we relocated the bridge tents into the convention center, which allowed for more space to occur, the distancing to actually occur. But it also allowed us to introduce more beds there.
So it's bigger than what it was at the current tent. So there's more availability for others to come along. So we did that. So that's already in operation and in operating. And aside from making sure that there's a distancing regulations within the convention center, we also partnered with the county to ensure that there's actually a medical facility there. So we have a full medical facility. We have the service providers that we're also utilizing this moment to work with the population to try to figure out ways, and we're actually relocating them permanently to a location. So we're using this opportunity to work with them during this period of time. And I want to reassure that there is medical, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions in terms of the convention center. There's an actual full-on team every single day of the hour that is there present. If they need to, they see any symptoms from any of our residents in the convention center, they right away get taken away from the rest of the folks and they get tested. Now today, I believe it was announced by the county supervisor, Nathan Fletcher, I heard that Lucky Duck Foundation has given money to actually guarantee for every single resident in the convention center, they're all going to get tested for COVID-19. So we weren't doing that. We were only doing it if the symptoms were there, then that's when we were doing it. If somebody was caught with COVID, they would then get placed in isolation in the hotels, because we also have certain amount of hotels that are available, not only for the unsheltered residents, but just overall for everybody in our region. There are certain amount of hotels that have been allocated to the regional task force because they're also taking precautions. They're trying to place our seniors that are living in the streets in rooms. But they're also wanting to make sure, because people are just saying, well, why don't you just get a bunch of rooms and place people there? They're going to have their own space. The problem with that approach is it's still the population. They still need services. And we do not have enough service providers to be placed in every single room. It's impossible. So that's why we cannot do that. So that'll be done strategically and smartly. So that's why we're doing that. But we're doing as much as possible. Now the commission actually has called for an emergency board meeting that I believe they're meeting tomorrow. And the board is considering, this is something that might be coming to the council, to the housing authority. They're thinking about, because right now motels have been hit significantly. And some folks have possibly might lose their investment. So what the Housing Commission is considering is allocating a certain amount of money that they have in reserves to start acquiring or start leasing some of these motels to use as permanent supportive housing in the future. So that's something that, to start transitioning people from the convention center, you start transitioning them into these facilities that we might be acquiring. That's still something that is being discussed and exploring. And we're going to explore the idea to see if that's something that we can do as well to start creating more permanent. Basically, our biggest challenge is having a more stable, permanent, supportive housing. We don't have enough. We have not had enough for a long while, and that's still a problem. So we're trying to figure out, how do we bring more of that in a quicker way? This is a idea. I don't know if it's going to move forward or not. I don't know how I feel about it either yet. I still need to look at the details and what that looks like, but that's an idea that is being floated right now. So that's kind of the logistics of what we're doing right now.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of more questions, and I want to make sure that I get this question in, and this is both for Terry and Georgette. I'd like to ask one more before you answer it, but I don't want either of you to leave without answering it. We want to know, as citizens and as the El Cerrito Community Council, what we can do to help you do your jobs better. But before you tackle that one, I have two questions that I want to sort of collapse because I think they're important and they're on people's minds. And that really has to do with protecting our neighborhoods and our citizens, particularly if the quarantine lasts much longer. People are worried about what happens when people run out of food, they run out of money, they run out of the necessities on life. And in there seems to be this fear that crime will really spike. So what are we going to do to prevent that? And a follow-up question on there is, what are homeowners' rights for protecting their homes and properties, i.e. with a gun? Those are really tough questions, but I think they're fears that are on people's minds. Can you, either one of you, want to tackle that?
Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah.
I'll follow up.
Yeah. Okay. The thing about protecting one's property, there used to be a gentleman, and I kind of chuckled when you said that, because when you asked that question, there was a gentleman that used to, and he still does, attend the El Cerrito meetings, but he always had a question that pertains to, and someone on this group is going to recognize him, the name, but he used to say, what if I have a gun and someone breaks in my house, can I shoot them? And I used to say, it depends. And he'd be like, it depends what? And I go, what's the guy doing? If he's taking your blender and running out the door, no, you can't shoot the guy for taking a blender. Everybody has the right to defend themselves. But it's not a yes or no question, and it's not a, when it comes to your decision or an individual's decision to use deadly force, it definitely, I can't answer that question for you, should you use deadly force? Neither can anyone. That's something that you're going to have to articulate, that you felt that you were fearing for your safety, the safety of your loved ones in the house, and why you feel that way. For people to go out and purchase guns that aren't familiar with guns, I think that would be almost very irresponsible, personally. But that's everyone's right to do so if they, you know, decide to do that. I think that being vigilant, like everyone is now, observing, you know your neighbors, you know what, well, who's in the area and who isn't. And continue to do what we're doing. I don't see crime being any more than what it is now, to be honest with you. I think there's a lot of, everyone can always get into this fear of the unknown and break to come out and just be themselves and live, but that's not gonna happen. Life has to go on. You can still get out, you can still walk, still get sunshine. We live in the best area in the world, arguably. And it's great to get out, feel the wind in your hair, get the sun. Just don't do it in groups, you know. Walk your dog, if you have a cat, walk your cat. I don't know if cats walk or not. But, you know, get out and experience that fresh air. We all need that. Just obey the guidelines set forth for social distancing. But no, I wouldn't say, you know, we have to be smart too. In other words, if would I park my car on the street and leave my laptop in the front seat, people do it. Was that a smart thing to do? No. You know, people leave earplugs or phone jacks that people can see. You know, we've always been advocates and encouraging people to minimize, anything you do can minimize the potential of you being a victim. We had a lady, one of the other communities today, that said, and my porch light on, crime is getting bad in the neighborhood because someone walked up on my porch and took my bicycle. But yet her bicycle wasn't secured anything. It was just out sitting on the front porch. In an idealistic world, yes, that should not have happened. But we all know that that's the high probability of that happening is probably there. You know, and I think that, but if we look at everything, and I like the word that Everyone is using the holistic side of everything what's going on. I don't foresee, you know, the people that are going to do nefarious activities are going to do nefarious activities. You know, I wouldn't recommend selling everything and meeting someone in an alley trying to sell a guitar and those type things. You know, because everyone is, there's always those people that's going to take advantage of people. But no, my biggest concern at the moment is probably some of the elderly people who may get some spam phone calls and be suckered into to giving money to donations and that kind of stuff. But I don't foresee, you know, crime's going to happen, absolutely. I don't see it being worthy of people having to defend their household with the gun. That's not happening. I don't know if that answered your question or not. And then
I think it does. The policing structure of the city right now does not anticipate a huge spike in crime based on, poverty conditions.
We're still working. I mean, everybody else can say they're sheltering in place. As much as I love the fire department, they're not driving around looking for fires. They don't come out unless they're caught on. We come out and look for things. We get caught on as well. You know, so I just say those things I say those things because I'm boasting. I'm proud of the fact that we are out there. We still want to be visible. And we want people to look at us and say, okay, look, there's the black and white. They're still here because we have not left anywhere. And we're still definitely, we're open for business.
Okay, you know? Terry, great. Thank you.
We're not going to wait for just, you know, I love the fire department, but they're not proactive. They don't drive around looking for fires. We do. So we're still open for business. I want people to see this and realize we're still out and about.
Georgette, you want to tell
them? Yeah, I'll just add a little bit more. I think I have a little bit of more of a, we're all going through some difficult times and it's hitting every single one of us in different manners, right? In terms of running out of food, I don't think we're going to get to that point. There's plenty, and our grocery stores are well stocked. There's some weird thing about toilet paper right now, but you find it. I think sometimes in circumstances like these, it elevates an anxiety for people, and I think we saw that at the first week where people were just rushing into the stores and they're just grabbing, but I think that's changing now. People are understanding that you don't need to do that. And that's starting to see, we're starting to see a transition on that and how people are managing their consumption at the grocery store. So we just need to make sure that we don't over consume, that you have enough for a week. You don't have to stock up for months. That's not needed. We have plenty of resources, so that's in that we're not going to get to that point. There are plenty of nonprofits are stepping up as well for those folks that are very, very restricted because of money. They're not able to go to the grocery store. That's a luxury for some people. There are many dispensaries that are coming up because of this immediacy. I really want to encourage people to check out the website that we created that is dedicated for resources. We have a list of places, hours that food is been handed to people. So that's also being, I mean, we have a lot of amazing organizations and there's practically every single day that somebody's giving food away somewhere in this city, in this region. So people are not gonna go out and they're not gonna go without food. I think we're going to be taken care of, and we have that. And like I said, people are going to have their electricity's not going to be shut down, their water's not going to get shut down, the city's still operating just like what Terry said earlier. They're working, we're working
24 hours as well. We're not shutting down. So in terms of the operations of the city, things are moving forward. I want us to create this hysteria that we're going to get to a point of survivor of the fittest mentality. I think you talked about what can we do. Let's be our best self in situations like these. This is a critical moment in time that we're all going through. It's difficult. It's challenging. But I think this is an opportunity for us to be our best self, and let's not react with this sense of I gotta protect my own. It's not worth it. And then let's just treat each other and let's support one another the best that we're able to do. And I think it's an opportunity for us to be better, our best human possible way. And I really want to stress that, because that moments like these can go either way, right? And I really want to express the importance of let's be mindful that sometimes a gun that is very lethal can lead to even worse situations. Just by protecting something that we thought was getting impacted, or that is somebody felt threatened, can lead to situation that it's not the best. So let's just think about it. Let's not use violence as never a way out from anybody. And let's just try to be our best self. There are plenty of resources available. We're gonna do our best to ensure that people know where they are and they're available. And you can call us. We're working 24 hours and we're making ourselves available. We're taking resources to people. I delivered masks to a senior housing this weekend. I have grapefruits and oranges in my backyard. I've been picking them more than I've ever picked them in my life, delivering them to our safe parking lots to ensure that we're taking care of our unsheltered population. So let's just be our best self right now. We have an opportunity to rise up. So let's do that collectively.
Good, thank you. By the way, can the El Cerrito Community Council put a link on its webpage to your link to your webpage?
Most definitely, yes.
Can I ask a question here?
Sure, Jim, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, Georgette. I think you alluded to it, and I really hadn't thought about it at all. What's going on in the border crossing? Is that still operating as normal?
It's not operating normal. There are restrictions of people crossing and who's able to come back and forth. But there was a point, like I said, early on, I jumped on the call. I haven't connected. But early on, the officials on the Baja side of things, they were not moving as quickly as we wanted them to move. Like I said, we wanted to create this sense of we're all in this together. If we're asking businesses to shut down, not let people dine in, we wanted them to take those recommendations as well. They were pushing back a little bit, but eventually they realized that they needed to do it just because they saw what the outcome was going to be, because they were trying to protect their economy. So they have changed their way, their approach now. And there are, I don't know the details of it to tell you the truth, but definitely the crossing is not as robust as it was before. It's limited. You need to have a rationale as to why you're going back and forth, and you have to prove it. I've been working with Baja California right now, because right now their medical facilities are not ready whatsoever. They haven't peaked yet. So they're very, very concerned. So I've been working on trying to identify medical supplies and resources for them. I actually wrote a letter to the governor to see if there's a possibility of us sharing some of our supplies with them. And the reason being is because if they get an explosion, that explosion is going to bleed into our side. And we gotta recognize that. So for me, it's making sure that we're doing the right thing for our community, but also they're part of our community, because we have city employees that that cross the border every single day, that they live in Tijuana. So that's just the reality. So we need to make sure that they're getting the resources necessary to ensure that they're going to be ready. So it's limited. And even the operations, the border closes a certain hour as well. So it's being managed right now.
Great. Are there any other questions from the floor for Georgette? Anybody else want to jump in? Okay, Georgette, just one more and then we'll let you go if that's okay. And it just has to do with and maybe this is what you meant when you talked about working with the federal government to get more resources, but there seems to be concerns, particularly around handling unemployment and small business loans for the payroll protection plan, the PPP. So how are those issues going for the city of San Diego? Do we have enough resources to handle, can our people get unemployment and can our small businesses get these loans? And the related question around that was that there's some kind of sanction on Wells Fargo. So any small business banking with Wells Fargo is just out of luck since banks were only helping people that bank with them. So any thoughts on that? How's that going for our community?
Wilmer, if I could just jump in, I have to go because my cell phone's dying.
Oh, sorry, Terry. Okay, sure.
I'm using it as a hotspot, and I just wanted to say thank you guys. Thank Georgette. Thank her staff. Thank all your community members. It's great seeing you. We love you guys. Appreciate all you do. And I put a little note on the very bottom on our chat area, Zoom over there. I don't know everybody can see our chats and stuff. You may not know us there with those on phones. But it just says something like just, you know, stay calm. This too will pass. Thank you all for being such amazing community members. And stay safe. We'll see you guys later. Bye.
Thank you, Terry.
Terry, thank you.
All the incredible work that you guys are doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
So small loans, right? And the support. So I do know in unemployment, yes, those are systems that we're not equipped to respond to the level of to the level that we're seeing. I mean, we have a presidential unemployment application process right now that we're seeing. One of the things that the governor has done now, actually, I believe he announced it today. If not today, he did it yesterday. The dates, you probably all can agree, the dates are just merging together nowadays. I don't know what day I'm in. The weekends looks like it's just another day for me. But there's been an expansion of hours for serving the folks that are applying for unemployment. I believe the hours now have been extended from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., I believe. So we'll make sure to update our website to give that information. There's been more resources and more staffing dedicated for processing those applications because they are going pretty slow and people are still waiting. And they're mindful of that. So they're trying to move as quickly as possible to ensure that they're getting the checks to the people that are needing it now. So that's occurred. In terms of small business and the loans, like I said, for the city of San Diego, we created a fund that was about $6 million. That was per applicant, and we were only the criteria there is that any business that had less than 100 employees working full-time or less could apply, and that's still the same criteria. So, and we're still taking up applications, by the way. So if you're a business and you have less than 100 employees that are full-time, you can apply for this fund. The fund is either a loan at zero interest or a loan a grant, basically, to help you pay your bills or help you keep your payroll going as well. And they're about $10,000 to $20,000 per applicant for application. There's more requirements within that, but those are kind of like the high level. And then, so that was $6 million that we were able to put together. And like I said, what's happened with that, we've been, the city, the mayor actually, you know, give him credit, and he's been doing good work within, with the, for the business community. He was able to get other local businesses to support this fund, like Qualcomm, Deloitte, Calco's Credit Union. They provided $4 million in addition to what we allocated. There's $4 million to this fund that was added. So we're at $10 million if you're adding in your head. So we're trying aggressively to seek partnerships with other businesses to be able to expand this fund, because it's very critical. Now, in terms of state, I believe the state has made $50 billion available through the state iBank, which is the program that it's a loan for small businesses, but the interest is at a very, very low. I don't know if it's got any interest or not, actually, probably not. And this iBank loan is for the folks that are not able to, they do not qualify for the assistance that the federal government is providing. So we're mindful that the federal government is giving us some money, right? But that's not covering all the businesses because of their qualifications. So then our governor stepped up to say, okay, because we're leaving certain businesses out, I'm gonna add this money to the iBank where these businesses can apply for these loans. So that's to ensure that they're getting support as well. And let's say, what else? Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. So once again, just in relation to this, this is a very evolving conversation that is occurring every single day at every single level of government, from the local to the state to DC. I've shared what I know so far, but I definitely wanna, because our business community is definitely getting hit significantly, and we're mindful of that. So we're trying aggressively to figure out ways in which we're bringing or creating support. Like for example, another thing that the city did, we extended the business certificate program. So this is for business. I'm getting business wonky right now, but businesses apply for certain license. Those licenses have been extended to 180 days or 120 days or something like that. And then we also, for businesses, I mentioned that utilities early on, mentioned that utilities are not going to get shut down for homeowners or renters. That also gets transferable to business community as well. If they're not able to pay, or they have to make decisions, do I pay my mortgage or do I pay my employees versus paying the utilities? Well, we can work with them, and we're trying to figure out ways in which we can relieve some of the costs to certain businesses as well.
Great. Georgia, thank you. Thank you very much for all the time you've given us tonight. And I absolutely promised we would not keep you beyond 8:30. So,
okay.
Does anybody have any final thing? Okay, otherwise we can say good night and thank you. And thank you for volunteering to come back if we can,
of course.
If we have to do this again.
More than happy. Yeah, more than happy to do it again. Just let Stouffer know and I'll make myself available. And I'll just leave you all with some final words. I'm going to invite you to, once again, because you did post a question of what can you do to help us get through this. I think that's a really critical question, and I don't want to not answer it. I'm going to say a couple of things. One is, if you're able to stay home, stay home. Just try to do that as much as possible. I know that that's a luxury for a lot of us, but if you have it, just do that. If you do have to go outside, remember to please cover your face. That's really critical, and maintain distance from other people. And those are like the the major things. Wash your hands constantly. That's also important. So that's really what somebody can do as an individual. Now, if you're able, if you've not been hit financially, there's a lot of folks that are trying to raise money. If you want guidance, because right now, I think Terry alluded earlier that there's a lot of predators out there that are taking advantage of the situation, and they're making calls asking, hey, would you like to donate to this new thing that is not really a thing? Give us a call. We're willing to give you references of some of the groups that are legit, that are doing good work, and that are needing support as well financially. But that's if you're able to do that. One major thing that we're about to enter that I really want to stress the importance of getting your participation is the budget hearings. Please engage with us. It's really important. It's always important to hear from the public during these very critical hearing discussions, but even now, even more than ever, because we are going to, I need to stress this, we are going to need to make decisions that will lead to cutting, reducing some costs. What would that look like? The mayor has expressed his recommendations. I'm not saying that I'm supportive or not, but I really want to hear from District 9 residents to give me guidance, because it's going to be important. It's going to be difficult discussions, and we all need to be in it together. So I will make sure that you all get the information, and when we start the process, to engage you. But please stay engaged. And with that, thank you for inviting me. Also thank you for getting together and really sharing information that is important. And like I said, more than happy to come back and do it again. So thank you. Thank you all.
Great. Well, thank you too. You.
Thank you, Georgette, very much.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You. Stay safe.
Yep. Good night, all you too. Stay healthy.
Good night.
Good night.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.
Good night.